Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case of the morning is Hay against Thompson Distribution. Mr. Betts.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court. By admission of even the defendant, this is a case of the only five Caucasian working and employed at Thompson Distribution being fired simultaneously by an African-American business owner who were all replaced, except for one, by African-Americans. There is absolutely no documentation of any discipline or performance issues whatsoever. With these Caucasians.
You said there were only five, there were 14 employees, right?
Exactly.
And all the rest were black?
That is my knowledge.
And that has not been disputed in the record.
There is no documentation of progressive discipline, although this was provided for in the handbook. There was no documentation of the employer's expectations whatsoever that were later claimed not to be met. There was no documentation of the evaluation that was allegedly to be provided after a 90-day trial period. There was no documentation whatsoever in support of the 2 years post-firing reasons that were filed.
I don't understand this documentation business. Do you expect a firm of 14 employees to behave like the Postal Service?
No.
And if it did, would that be admirable?
No, Your Honor. My point is that the basis for any discussion on these topics of what were the reasons, what were the expectations, is all post hoc termination decision-making and reasons provided. There is no documentation to refer back to. So any discussions, and that is the point. The point is that any expectations are all delved up from self-serving affidavits. In many points in the discussion by the district court in its entry, it says that these are simply points raised by affidavits and deposition testimony by the plaintiffs, and they have nothing else to rely on because there is no documentation to rely on. In other words, this is a defense by stealth. Say nothing and later bring up your reasons and your expectations and you get a free ride. That's what happened here. All of the reasons asserted were refuted and disputed by the plaintiffs in the simultaneous firing of five Caucasians who were all replaced by African Americans. And there was no basis to not have a jury trial in here on this case because all of these issues come down to jury trial factual disputes between these parties, what these parties said were expectations, what they believed were their duties, and what were problems or not problems. Even the defendant admits in his brief that the trial court adopted all of their factual assertions. That is not what's permitted by the Federal Rule of 56, which is to view all of the plaintiff's facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiffs. For example, the district court says that Thompson Distribution's point about Mrs. Hay, that her own points were supported only by her own self-serving affidavits. As we know, this court says all affidavits usually are self-serving. It was all admissible evidence. It was never moved to be stricken, and indeed, the court did not strike it. But the court goes on to say that she cannot rely on such self-benefiting assertions to defeat a summary judgment motion without some additional factual support. Well, there was no additional documents or any other factual support for her to go to, other than the resounding and fundamental fact here that all five whites were simultaneously fired by an African American with no reasons given and no documentation whatsoever. Indeed, there was a handbook that provided for progressive discipline. None was given, no verbal or written rulings whatsoever or documentation or reasons provided for the termination, and yet the plaintiffs are supposed to provide additional support. They can't.
None of that is... Counsel, if I could interrupt you. You're arguing all of this as if any of that is unusual in the context of an at-will employment situation, and it's not at all unusual in an at-will employment situation that someone would be fired without that sort of paper trail, for lack of a better word.
What do you say for 16 years? It's sometimes usual, sometimes unusual, from what I see. That doesn't give a free pass. All I'm arguing is that doesn't give a free pass to the defendant to survive summary judgment simply because they provided no documentation or no reasons. We don't automatically believe the defendant's reasons. All I'm asking for is a jury trial.
Time is short. You might attempt at some point to deal with the reasons given by the defendant and the reasons given by the district court.
Absolutely.
For example, if I understand correctly, the defendant said that Mr. Haig was fired because he sold goods on a lower markup than Mr. Thompson demanded. And I gather from the record that your client has conceded that that's true. He did indeed sell goods on a lower markup than Thompson had demanded. That's, one would think, that's just an admission of insubordination, QED. What more is there to legal about?
That's a wonderful point, Your Honor. And the point is, there were absolutely no expectations given verbally or in documentation from the
house. Stop the documentation stuff.
Well, there was, I said, not only did I say, Your Honor, with all due respect, no documentation.
All due respect means, if you were the judge, I'd like to slap you about the mouth. Get rid of that phrase, too.
That's not what I mean by it at all, Your Honor. If that's what you take for me, that's something different. That's not what I mean by it. Because I did say,
what does the word do in the phrase, all due respect, mean?
Now, I'm moving on to the substance. And the substance is that I also said no verbal notification of what the expectations were. And the only thing that was conceded is that the post hoc expectations of a 20% margin was not met. But that means nothing because there was no expectation given to Mr. Haley when he was supposed to sell it at what margins, and even if he could not sell it, he was given full permission to sell it, and then after the fact, 2 years later, was told this did not meet the margins he was supposed to be meeting in some way. He was supposed to make it up what were these expectations that Mr. Thompson had. That's the fundamental point about lack of documentation, lack of verbal notification. No, not every firm needs documentation, but they also don't get a free pass at summary judgment. That's the fundamental point here. For example, as well, Anne Hewitt, she was allegedly insubordinate, but there's nothing specific even by the defendant 2 years later when he testifies as to what was the specific acts of subordination. He simply relies on it as his feelings and his beliefs as the business owner. And he says, indeed, that he thought Anna Perry was the most insubordinate of all. But you ask him again, well, what was that indication of why she was the most insubordinate at all? I have nothing to give you. I have no documents. I have no information, verbally or otherwise, anything to offer you as to incidents. I don't even have what I believe to be an incident of insubordination. All I have, says Mr. Thompson in the record, is my beliefs and feelings. And
I guess you're saying, is the fact that all of the white people were fired and replaced by black people. Is that your contention? And you're saying that every reason he gave was all hindsight, there's no documentation, there's no basis for that other than what he says. Is that true? What did they have? Did they have any basis for what they were doing while they worked there? Was there a testimony? This is, we always did 20%, for example, or something. Is there something, by comparison,
right,
is there any evidence of something, of any racial overtones other than the fact that black people replaced white people?
Well,
other than the pretext that, for example, when Anna Perry was fired and told, finally, what was the reason for her termination? Well, she was insubordinate. She was most insubordinate of all. What is the specifics of that insubordination? I have nothing to give you, says Mr. Thompson. That is pretext. And he only relies on his beliefs and feelings. And later on in other situations, he talks about he was honestly mistaken when he talks about a boiler being given back to another company, even though the documentation existed. He later held that against Mr. Brown and Mr. Hay, but then when it turns out the documentation actually shows him to be wrong, he says, well, I was just honestly mistaken. Well, how we deal with those issues and those feelings of insubordination with no actual incidents to describe it, especially when you have five whites fired simultaneously by an African-American business owner and replaced by all African-Americans, what happens is in our system we get jury trials to sort that out. And that's all my clients want here. Your Honor, I see my rebuttal time has been cut into, and I will wait for my rebuttal, unless you need me to follow up in any way. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Betts.
Good morning,
Mr. Prather.
Please, the Court. My name is Anthony Prather, and I represent the appellees, Thompson Distribution and John Thompson. The appellee's position that the district court was correct in its granting of summary judgment with respect to the appellant's Section 1981 claim. Recognizing some of the discussion from the Mr. Betts' presentation, what I'd like to do is concentrate on our argument that the appellants did not establish, through admissible evidence, a prima facie case of discrimination. In other words, that they were meeting the legitimate business expectations of Thompson Distribution. What I'd like to do is look at each of the appellants individually. Mr. DeBoer was hired to do inside sales for Thompson Distribution. During his 90-day trial period, sales were low. And in fact, the appellants have conceded that during his time as inside sales, that the sales were low. As a result, it is the appellee's belief that he cannot and has not established a prima facie case of discrimination. With respect to Ms. Hay, she was hired to work the Profit 21 accounting system. During her 90-day probationary trial period, she had problems handling the Profit 21 accounting system. Additionally, during that same 90 days, she was doing work on behalf of Mutual Supply. Now, the appellants have conceded that she did have problems with the Profit 21 system, and they have also conceded that she did do work for Mutual during the time she was being paid by Thompson. As such, it's our position that the appellants have not and cannot establish a prima facie case with respect to Cynthia Haig. With respect to Mr. Mark Brown, Mr. Brown was hired as the warehouse supervisor. During his time as the warehouse supervisor, Mr. Thompson received reports that he cursed and yelled at his subordinates. During his probationary period, he returned a boiler to a mutual supplier that Mr. Thompson felt was his. Now, the appellants have conceded that Mr. Brown used language that Mr. Thompson felt inappropriate in the workplace, and they have also conceded that Mr. Brown returned a boiler. So it is the appellee's position that with respect to Mr. Brown, he has not and cannot establish a prima facie case of discrimination. With respect to Anna Perry, Ms. Perry was hired to work in purchasing. During her 90-day probationary period with Thompson Distribution, she was, in Mr. Thompson's opinion, he became frustrated with her unwillingness to do work and to do jobs the way he wanted her to do them. Now, the appellants have conceded that Mrs. Perry could not do the job that Mr. Thompson expected of her. They have also conceded that at one point she informed Mr. Thompson that with respect to something that he wanted her to do, and she was going to have to check with Mark Haig first. As a result, it is the appellee's position that the appellants have not and cannot establish.
If I can interrupt for a minute, going back to Anna Perry, what should we make of the exchange that apparently took place between Ms. Perry and Mr. Thompson at the time of her dismissal? She said something to the effect of, have I done anything wrong, or was to that effect, and he said no.
Sure. Mr. Thompson's position was all of these individuals, when they were hired, were told that they were hired for a 90-day probationary trial period. They got welcoming letters informing them that any insurance would come after the expiration of the 90-day trial period. Additionally, they received a handbook that talked about the 90-day probationary trial period. Mr. Thompson's position was he determined with respect to each of the appellants that because of the history that they brought with them from Mutual Supply, particularly, not particularly, but in addition, Mrs. Perry, he didn't feel that they were going to be a good fit for Thompson Distribution. So his position was consistent with what I told him in the beginning, and that is that it's a 90-day trial period. Prior to the expiration of the 90-day trial period, he simply decided he did not want to keep the appellants and inform them that their employment would not continue.
That's a different sort of an explanation than you've just given us. You've identified specific failings on the part of each of these employees which precipitated their dismissals.
Correct.
But now you're saying that he simply didn't think it was a good fit, and so that's why he didn't extend them past their 90-day trial.
At the meetings, that was the response that he gave each of them. It's the end of your 90-day probationary period. It's not a good fit. I'm not going to extend you and I'm not going to continue your employment outside of the probationary period. So I think that what he did at the time was to not give them a specific explanation with respect to why he was not going to continue their employment. Okay?
The people, these people came from Mutual Supply, that business had failed, I guess.
It was failed in November of 2001, Your Honor.
And the 14 employees, were they all former Mutual Supply people?
I'm not sure with respect to the total number of 14. The five appellants were all former Mutual Supply.
That's what I'm wondering, but as far as the carryover, were the other people already working at, had they been working at Mutual Supply?
I don't believe that the vast majority of them have been working at Mutual Supply. I don't believe that any of them have been
working at Mutual Supply. Did Mr. Thompson have any business relationship with Mutual Supply before he bought it?
He did not. He had no relationship at all with Mutual Supply, and he bought certain of the assets at an auction in November of 2001.
So he took just bought the assets and failed business. Were these people still working in some form under Mutual Supply when he acquired the assets, or was that completely done?
What happened was, I believe that he acquired the assets on about November 26th. That same day, Mutual closed its doors, terminated its employees. Mr. Thompson that evening interviewed certain of their employees and offered offers of employment to the appellants.
These five?
Yes, sir.
And he interviewed some others that he didn't hire?
I believe so, yes.
Counsel, usually in these reverse discrimination cases, in addition to the usual elements of the burden-shifting formula on summary judgment, there's a need to come forward with some background circumstances, is the phrase that the cases use, indicating a reason or inclination to discriminate invidiously against whites. And as I read your brief, I didn't see you advancing that argument or addressing that argument here, resting most of your argument on the part of the test that focuses on whether or not the employees were meeting legitimate expectations of the employer, and then the pretext issue. Is this additional part of the formula something that you're just disregarding for purposes of summary judgment here?
For purposes of summary judgment and the facts in the record, exactly, Your Honor. With respect to, Mark Haig, the record is clear with respect to Mr. Haig, that during his time at Thompson Distribution, that he did in fact sell product at margin Mr. Thompson believed was unreasonable, and also that he was involved in the return of the boiler that Mr. Thompson honestly believed to be his boiler to a Mutual Supplier. So it's the appellee's position that with respect to Mr. Haig, that similarly, the appellants have not and cannot establish that Mr. Haig was meeting the legitimate performance expectations of Thompson Distribution. I think I will touch on, for just a couple of minutes now, on the additional argument, and that is that even if the plaintiffs had established the prima facie case of discrimination, which I don't believe that they've done, that they have not established pretext with respect to Mr. Thompson's legitimate non-discriminatory reasons for the termination decision. And in fact, if you look at Mr. DuBois, he has conceded the basis for his termination, and that is that his sales were low. His response has simply been to provide excuses with respect to why his sales were low. With respect to Mr. Brown, Mr. Brown has also admitted that the underlying reason for his termination, and that is his treatment of his subordinates, and also the return of the boiler, he concedes that those things happened, but again, he only makes excuses with respect to why they happened. With respect to Ms. Haig, she has also admitted the underlying reason for her termination, and that is her inability to handle the Profit 21 system, and an admission that with respect to working for Mutual, she was doing that while paid by Thompson Distribution. Again, I believe that she has admitted, has failed to rebut the appellee's legitimate non-discriminatory reasons for her termination. And then next, with respect to Anna Perry, and I recognize that the appellants disagree with Mr. Thompson with respect to his belief that she was the most insubordinate. But the appellants have conceded, in fact, that she could not do the job that Mr. Thompson expected of her. They have also conceded that with one particular situation, when Mr. Thompson asked her to do something, she refused to do it and said that she would have to consult with Mr. Haig. So with respect to Ms. Perry, it's our belief that she too has failed to establish pretext with respect to the reason for her termination. And finally, Mr. Brown. Mr. Brown has not disputed the underlying reason for his termination, and that is Mr. Thompson's belief that he had lost confidence in him because of the fact that he sold product at a margin too low for Mr. Thompson, and also his involvement, again, with the return of the boiler. Instead, what Mr. Haig has done is simply make excuses. It's our position with respect to each of the appellants that they have not proven pretext. What they have done is simply given excuses for their inability to do a job that was expected of them by John Thompson. Unless the court has any further questions, I have no further remarks. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Betts?
Yes, just briefly, Your Honor, I think the point was very well described by Mr. Prather, that indeed what we have here are contradictory reasons that are offered up, hoping that one of them hits the target. One of the reasons we're given is that this is a 90-day trial period. No reasons are offered or given for the termination. But then to bolster that point, we get these insubordination where we make concessions out of no concessions. These are concessions by Ms. Perry. We get opinions as to what he believed. We get nothing other than contradictory reasons for termination. And that is the basis for a jury trial in this case, especially when you have five rights, the only rights employed at the time at Thompson Distribution, all replaced by African Americans except for one, Bernie Dubois, who was terminated, but later the reason we're given is that there weren't many sales in that department, so it becomes a layoff. And the court, it is undisputed that the court, in its injury summary judgment, makes up out of whole cloth. There's no basis in the record anywhere that Mr. Dubois' duties were assumed by Caucasians. So that is the basis for why my clients believe they deserve a jury trial, and there is really little dispute, and it has been evidenced by the oral argument by my opposing counsel. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.